This episode of the Interho Uprising is sponsored by you. That is right, you. All of your Patreon donations, PayPal donations, five-star reviews on Apple and Stitcher, shoutouts on social media, articles, mentions to your friends, IHU merchandise purchases all make this show possible week in and week out. Thank you very much, homies. This episode of the Interho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Welcome to the Interho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist hoe who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, pronouns she and her, who is a hoe that's almost vaxxed and waxed. Okay.
Hey, hey. Cool. Every episode of the Interho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're talking all about sex, love, and dating in the lives of people from Generation X, aka Generation Sex, which is what we're calling it on this episode.
We'll call it.
What is it like fucking at 50 and beyond? We'll be joined by a very special guest to answer that question and much more.
And if you would like to follow this conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Interho Uprising so that we can see it in the hashtag pod and so other people can see it. If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Interho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Interho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You can also join our Facebook group by searching Interho Uprising Community. That is C-U-M-M-U-N-I-T-Y. And head over to InterhoUprising.com to pay a hoe.
Cool. And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show, or if you'd like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to book us. You can send us a line to IHUpodcast@gmail.com. So excited to get into the actual episode, so much so that, you know, I have the little drops for the episode or whatever, but I have a special drop for this guest. So let me pull it up really quick. It might sound familiar, but this is what we're going for this segment.
Grandma! Yeah. Are you a hoe?
I can't wait.
I love it.
So that's normally what we use for our Hoe of the Week segment, but we're using it for our Fuck It segment, the topic of the day. Because today we're speaking to a member of Generation X, aka Generation Sex, with our guest. And today's guest is Melissa, aka Mella Ho,
yes,
whose pronouns are she and her. Melissa is an over 50 granny with a plump fanny, still wiggling in a size medium, exploring online kink when she should be at hedonism, sipping on Mai Tais, no thanks to COVID. Welcome, Melissa, aka Mella Ho.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for writing in. Yeah, thank you for pitching yourself to be a guest.
Absolutely.
I feel like this will just be us chronicling your life because we just want to know.
Come with it.
About the whole trajectory.
Come with it.
let's start with where and when did you grow up?
I grew up in Virginia. A little town called Franklin, Virginia. I was actually born there, adopted there by the time I was 2 years old. I was conceived around 1967, born 1968, and was a part of a secret, a real deep secret for 52 years of my life. And at 52 years...
Wow. That's a whole different backstory.
Yeah. So sex, love, and dating started in 1967.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's very interesting. And that's like a whole different backstory. Yes. I have a similar story in my family, not pertaining to myself, but like one of my relatives. Mm-hmm. And it seems like people who were conceiving in the 60s had to do some secret things.
Yes.
Family members were not informed that other family members existed.
Mm-hmm. Whose mama?
Then you got Sam popping up like, hey, yo,
whose daddy won. Is who? And yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very interesting.
I mean, the siblings you may have out there. That's mm-hmm. what I found out beginning of 2020, that I had 7 siblings.
How did you find that out?
Ancestry.com.
Me too. Wait, we actually got to do a whole different Secret Families podcast.
Yes. We got to do a
yes.
Ancestry be spilling the tea. Like,
yes, they do. They be spilling all us Black folks' tea.
Oh, man.
Is it yes. good vibes with said family?
Yes. I am so happy to have met them. And you know, we got that done before COVID, the lockdown started, and it's been a pleasure. I am the oldest, so that's great. And I always wanted sisters, and so that's wonderful. And it's 5 girls and 2 boys. Mm. Well, men now, but yeah. So wow. I have sisters. I have little sisters, and it is wonderful. We FaceTime each other, and they all live in different parts. The one that found me actually lives in Nebraska, so she opened up her world for me because I was like, Black people live out there. Because I was like, well, are you biracial? Maybe he was with a white woman. You know? She said, no, I'm Black. My mother's Black. So wow. yeah.
Black people, shout out to the Black people in Nebraska.
In Nebraska. Yes.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Yes. I'm glad that y'all all linked up and all
yes.
that.
Yes. Yes.
So I guess this is a question that would obviously pertain to then your adoptive household.
Mm-hmm.
What was the climate like in your household when it came to sex, sex education, consent, healthy relationships, and all that kind of stuff?
None of that. My adopted mother, very sweet woman, God rest her soul. She, you know, it's a typical mother parent. I was a teenager in the 80s. So she was typical. She went to church. We went to church every Sunday. And as far as sex was concerned, she would always say to me, you know, I know you're gonna do it. And I was on birth control pills since probably the age of 13. But make sure you protect yourself. But then again, really don't do it. Just try to stay away from it. Don't do it. Because I feel you're just going to mess yourself up. That was the tone. And I could understand that once I got to be an adult myself and having my own children, and I had my first child at 18, I could understand where she was coming from, you know, because of the trauma that happened in her life. Because we as Black women still to this day are going through medical trauma with doctors not really caring about our health. And in the 60s, she had a full hysterectomy, which she probably just had fibroids.
Mm.
She didn't even know why she had that hysterectomy before she was like 19 years old. And that's why I was adopted, because she couldn't conceive children. Which was a blessing for me. I mean, it was bad for her because she loved kids. She loved kids. But it was a blessing for me that she couldn't have children, so she adopted me.
Yeah.
You know?
That's something I've been thinking about a lot lately when it comes to just, like, Black history. Like, sometimes I think slavery never should have happened. But then I'm like, my parents would have never met. And I wouldn't be here. And I love those people. It's such a, like, tough history.
It is
dealing with the trauma and the love at once.
And especially when if you start going down that rabbit hole in ancestry and starting to look at your ancestors and their lives, and it's like, damn, they really fuck with us. Can I curse?
Of course.
they really fuck with us bad, you know? Like,
Do you think that was a part of like, I mean, you were getting at this earlier, but like with your mom being so mistrustful, like, was it also her history with like men or just her own miseducation when it comes to sex, where it was just like, I don't have the tools. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. She married pretty much right after that hysterectomy, as you know, because she only told me like kind of bits and pieces of what happened. So, but she was married young, and that's just what they did. That was something they did. You get married, you want to have a family and cook and clean and all the domestic things that they said women should do back then. And my mom was all about it. She was very domesticated. And she not having the education, like I said, even about her own body, like, why are you giving a woman a full hysterectomy when she probably just has a fibroid, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, with growing up very religious and in a society with that, it forms a society that says having sex before you're married is just not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And then me coming from a woman who had sex, obviously, before she was married, before she even finished high school, you know, well, we don't want that same thing to happen to you, you know. So it she wanted to be open. I could tell, but she didn't want to be open either. And then sometimes I didn't want her to be open. Like, I don't want to talk to you about that. Like, when I got my period, I was like, I don't want to discuss this. Why is this happening to me? I was a football kid, you know? I was running around playing with the boys, playing with race cars, playing football. And I'm growing tits now. I'm growing hair right down there. And now I'm having a period. And like, I got to be a girl? Like, why? Like, it's just, this is wrong. And so when she started to have a conversation, like, how are you doing? Did you count on the calendar? How many days until your next period? And, you know, what kind of pads do you prefer to use? And I'm like, Mom, I just don't really want to talk about that right now. You know? Because when I went to get birth control pills, it was my aunt's brilliant idea. At 13 years old, I had not started having sex, wasn't considering having sex. I came from a mother who had a child by the time she was 17. And I played with boys so much. Like, that's just what I did. It was fun, you know? Their fear was that I was going to get pregnant.
You talking about your birth mom had you before she was 17?
Yes. Because they knew her. They knew her. I was an inter-family adoption, but I was legally adopted by the law.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. And so they placed that on you like...
Yeah.
Her mom was fast. She gonna be fast, quote unquote.
There you go. Gotcha. That fast word. Fast-ass girl. Yeah, that was it. So, yeah, with her playing around all them boys all the time, you know, she developing that little plump butt back there, you know, they gonna start feeling on or whatever, and she gonna get pregnant. So we gotta get her some birth control pills. So you're taking a 13-year-old girl to a clinic, first of all, that don't give a damn about her, a public clinic in the South, and giving her a pap smear with a metal object. Okay. I screamed bloody murder. My aunt told me she could hear me out in the lobby because my aunt took me. My mother was at work. And I was very embarrassed and I felt shameful. I was like, I'm sorry, you know, I made so much noise. But then I look back at it like, I should have screamed bloody, but I was 13 years old. I never had sex before. You sticking that thing up my vagina. No, I had no idea what was going on.
With probably no explanation. None. Like, first pap smear is a very intense, invasive procedure, and they don't be telling you what's about to happen. No. They just be doing.
Yes. Mm. They weren't very friendly, you know, and talking to me, and even when I went back times before for like regular checkups, it still hurt. I mean, that thing hurt probably all the way up until I was like 17. And to have this nurse say to me, well, you were able to take his dick, weren't you? Like, what?
What nurse said that?
Yes, it was a nurse that was in the room. When because doctors always would have nurses in there, because the doctors were normally male back then. I didn't have a female doctor, a gynecologist, mm-hmm. till I was probably in my 30s. Mm-hmm. And he had stepped out of the room for a second because it just was not, I was squirming too much. I probably was about 15 by then. Mm-hmm. And that's what she said to me. Like, what is the problem? You don't scream like that when he puts his dick in you. And I'm like, what?
That is so wildly inappropriate.
And I, you know, and you asked me about the climate in my home. Like, I couldn't even, you know, your parents were different back then. Couldn't tell my mom, like, this is the things that they're saying to me. Mm-hmm. Parents back then were pretty passive about things that happened to their kids while they were in school or while they went to doctors or whatever. It's like, well, it's just the way it is, you know? And so I let a lot of things just go by, but I look back now, it's like, I wouldn't dare want that to happen to one of my daughters, you know?
Right. Right. We definitely have some questions about how your early experiences have informed you as a parent a little bit later. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm so sorry that you had to go through all of that.
Yes.
I fuck those. If they still alive,
fuck their lives.
We gotta run up on them, honestly. Like, license revoked immediately. Right. That is so terrible. Yes. And so you were like, this is your interaction with the medical care system as it pertains to like your sex life or lack thereof, right, at 13. And then we talked about your home life. What kinds of messaging or messages were you getting from kids at school, friends, TV, and stuff like that when it came to sex?
At school, it was the thing of, by me being a Black girl and having a pretty big butt back then, boys would grab your butt. You know, it just, you didn't have any agency over your body when you think of it now. And kids talked about sex a lot in school. And I remember being in sixth grade and it was definitely sixth grade. And they happened to be talking about having a baby. And I was like, I don't ever want to have one of those. It's going to hurt my butt. And the reason why I said that, because I didn't know babies came out your vagina. They said, yeah. Melissa, babies don't come out of your butt. They come out of your front area, your vagina. And I'm like, oh, God, I really don't want to have a baby now. Like, oh my goodness, how did that, how? You know, so me learning about sex came trial and error, basically, in my teenage life, when I started to get the feeling of wanting something down there, other than my fingers, you know, because that started. I don't know what I rubbed against something one day or
it
whatever.
It just begins. And you're just like, oh, wow.
It's like, whoa, hey.
How old were you when you started masturbating?
I started masturbating about 14.
And was there any discussion or introduction by your, you know, your parents about that? Did you hide it from them as well?
Absolutely. That was fun. Actually had sex before I masturbated. I had sex at 13. I had a boyfriend who shouldn't have been my boyfriend. Now he was 18. But he was cute. I thought he was the cutest bow-legged person I ever seen. And he was my first. And that feeling of having a penis enter your vagina for the first time and that shock goes straight to the top of your head, that happened. And I had no idea what happened, you know, but it happened. And I didn't have sex anymore for a few years after that. It was basically masturbating, you know. And yeah, I didn't tell my parents that happened. I was on the pill because, like I said, at 13, I had already been to the clinic and I was taking the pill.
Did that kind of inform your, because before you got your period, you were just like, sex, what the fuck is that? And then like, did getting on birth control and I guess having this very basic version of the talk make you want to have a boyfriend?
Like, no. No. The feeling of wanting to have a boyfriend, it just came with this person that came into my life at that time. He was cute. And like I said, at 18, I guess, you know, he had a little bit of what we call now swagger.
Melissa, I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah,
the swag.
Yeah, you know, he was cool. You know, I'm 13 and this, you know, 18-year-old guy is interested in me, you know? And
did anyone know about that at the time?
That him and I had sex or about us dating or
that you were dating,
seeing each other. My mom read my diary and found out. But by the time she found that out, we had broken up. Well, he had broken up with me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And was there a conversation like, girl, you are 13. You are messing with 18-year-olds.
Yeah, well, that I didn't put his age in the diary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh, that would be good.
down south. Ooh, back then, that would not have been good for him. That wouldn't have turned out good now. So, no, I didn't put anybody's age in there. But
that makes sense.
I did put the experience. But, yeah, she threw a fit.
About the fact that he existed and you were dating someone, or that you had sex with
him? I had sex. And but also,
she's the one who
but I didn't get
control.
The ass whooping. Like, I got an ass whooping also that year, because I skipped school for a few days and was hanging out with him, and it got found out. Not from the diary, somebody in the neighborhood. You know, that term, it takes a village, but somebody in a damn village snitched on me. You know? Yeah. And I got an ass whooping for it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any specific reason in that kind of hiatus after having this initial sexual experience and you guys broke up? Were you just not dating anyone, or were you a bit, not put off, but weren't ready and kind of figuring that out?
It just didn't happen. It just did not happen for a few years until...
So you weren't actively pursuing it?
No, I wasn't. I was just too busy trying to be a teenager for the 2 years. It was 2 years actually in between, because the next time I had sex, I knew I was 15.
I kind of want to get back to that, too, because you were like, before getting your period and stuff like that, you were just one of the boys and you wanted to continue to be one of the boys and play football and stuff like that. After you started like developing and going through puberty and stuff like that, were you still able to be one of the boys? They were touching you without your consent. So did things change very much?
That group of boys they never did that. They were never sexual with me in any kind of way. They never touched me out of the way. Mm-hmm. Never. This was in school, some boys that I regularly didn't even see except at school. But it stopped only because I wasn't allowed to go out and play it with them anymore. And also, I was the last time I played football, because I was very good at it, catching the ball and running for a touchdown. This big guy picks me up. He was an older boy, and slams me into a tree, and my chest hits the tree.
Oh.
And I let ends my football career. Okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
My titties are here. I'm not doing that no more.
Ooh. Like, my titties hurt by proxy right now.
Yeah.
You know? Like, gotta touch them.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, he was jealous that I was getting away. He tackled me and slammed me into it. Instead of just slamming me on the ground or whatever, no, you throw me into a damn tree.
Okay. He was trying to end your football career.
Yeah.
He was like, I don't want the business.
I could have been the first Wally woman to play football. But no. Yeah, I let it go from there. Like, so, and then my... because my mom worked what they call swing shift. So I was always babysat by either my grandmother or my aunt. And they just were like, nope, not playing with those boys. Go find some girls to play with. And I'm like, oh, Oh, really? Damn. Like, girls are just no fun. They don't want to play sports. You know? They want to be cute and stuff. And I'm not into that. That's what I settle for, you know?
Mm. So. Shame. Oh. Yeah. Little girls are socialized to not do the things that they want to do.
I'm praying that the narrative changes for us. I can see it. I can see it in podcasts like yours. And I'm so hopeful, you know, that that starts to change. Just how we're looked at and how we're supposed to grow up to be women, to be ladies.
Don't like that word.
No. Right.
So can you tell us a little bit more about your, you know, romantic and sexual experiences 15 and up? You know, were you dating actively?
I was, I guess, how do you define dating? I was screwing.
All right.
Okay. Because I don't know. We describe dating as, you know, actually going out and actually having a relationship.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that. If I had a boyfriend, he was out of town. Some guy I met out of town or whatever. But I was screwing around. Like, I was really having sex, very sexually active. You know, so I don't know if that's considered dating, but I did. My mom, like I said, my mom worked swing shift. And so when they took those babysitting rings off me and I was able to stay home by myself and mama was going to work from 3 to 11 or 11 to 7, party over here.
There you have it. There you have it. That's funny. How was the sex? And I guess, like, what was it like to you then? Like, what did it mean to you then? And looking back on it, how would you describe it?
I was such an explorer. I learned a lot. I felt I learned stuff from television. Also magazines. My mom used to have these true romantic magazines. I don't think they make them anymore. I'm sure they don't. But that's what they call true romance magazines. And they, in these magazines, they had all these stories of couples and the things that they do. I wasn't supposed to be reading these magazines, but I was. And so parents back then and grandparents watched soap operas. And in soap operas, even though they didn't have sex, they would take showers together. Even though you didn't see them naked in the shower, you know they were in the shower together. And I thought that was the most amazing things. And so you come over my house, we're going to take a shower first. And we're going to take a shower together. That was a big thing. And you know, in these true romance magazines, they talked about oral sex. Well, you know, we called it blowjobs, BJs back then. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to experience that. When it came to men eating vagina, well, they were boys then, that was like brand new. You're talking 84, 85. It was like a brand new thing for these young boys to try that. And I liked it. It's like, wow, this is...
Melissa was out here pioneering oral sex. She was out here turning these boys out. Like, look what I've learned. We're going to try this today.
Like, weren't you going to wash your ass?
Yes.
Before we get to the getting.
The lesson.
You know? But, you know, and we had sex education class in middle school. But with that, I still didn't learn much about sexual diseases, venereal disease. And VD was a big thing at that point in my life. And I did contract that in one of my encounters. And also... it's something that's, it's not yeast infection, it's the other one. I can never think of that.
Bacterial vaginosis? Yeah, BV?
Yes, yes. I contracted that also from having sex. And so, like, the sexual education of diseases just was not there. And I could read all the magazines in the world.
So what were they teaching you? Because I know by the time me and Sam were
It was only about STIs.
It was only diseases. Yeah. So like, what were they then telling you back in the 80s?
They talked about putting on a condom. Like, they had a cartoon. It was an actual on this screen cartoon. Mm-hmm. About a condom, and if you don't use this, you could catch VD. Mm-hmm. Syphilis. That mm-hmm. was, I guess, common back then. I mean, it was just there. It was just show the film and take it from there.
No discussion it's real the implications discussion. Of it and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. So it became a joke, you know, mm-hmm. and then you take a quiz. And now you've passed sex education class. Move on to seventh grade. It just no discussion. And really, like I said, my mom was not really into that. And I really didn't want to have that discussion with her. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, not till I had my own kids that I realized it was so important to know about sexual health.
Yeah.
So here you were, you know, pioneering the sex world in the 80s with these young men, probably done showed them a thing or two, and you're screwing. But you earlier mentioned that you had your first child at 18. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about how that happened? Were you just screwing the father or dating?
We were actually in a relationship. He was in college. He probably was like a sophomore in college in North Carolina, and I lived in Virginia, which... We bordered North Carolina. So, I got pregnant. He happened to come home. I couldn't find, it was this contraceptive. It was like, cause by the time I had stopped taking pills, cause I kept vomiting first. I had no idea that was like going against my hormones or whatever and causing me to be sick. So I just stopped taking them, but I was using this contraceptive. I think it was called Today or something. It was a little white sponge. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when he came over one day, it was actually about 2 days before my birthday. He came from college to visit, and he came over, and I could not find that damn sponge. I knew I had one more left, and I couldn't find it. And so we had sex. I'm like, this should be okay. I got pregnant.
Only takes one time.
That one time. Yes. Yeah. And I told him that he thought I was a virgin. I told him I was a virgin. He didn't find out that I wasn't a virgin until many years later. It's like, no, I was not.
Ooh, Melissa.
What? That's so funny.
Now I know why my kids didn't want to hear this conversation.
What was the trajectory like with him? You had mentioned in your email pitch to us that you have been married 3 times. Was he one of them?
Yes. He actually, we broke up not too far before she was born because my first child was a girl. Both my children are women. Mm-hmm. Now. We broke up a little before that. Before her birth, we were broken up for a few years. So I dated someone else. I had another child, and him and I got back together while he was in the military. And then we married. And we shouldn't have done that. We really didn't know anything about each other, except that we shared a child. And he was my first husband.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How did it go? How long did it last?
That lasted about 18 months.
Woo! Quick!
Yeah. As far as us living under the same roof, it lasted about 18 months. We were married in like 91. I divorced him in like 1996.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 So you had your first daughter at 18. Mm-hmm. That puts us in like the early
1986. Okay. The year of my graduation.
Well,
yes.
What was it like dating as a teenage parent in the 80s?
So now, guys, you know, guys were attracted to you. Like I said, I did have another child. I met someone a couple of years later and had another child, my second child in 1988. And it wasn't a difficult thing. Like, it seems pretty difficult to date now. No internet. So you met people just passing by, going to the supermarket or something, or, you know, and you were attractive, they were attractive, and you say hello and, you know, they get into a conversation, exchange numbers, and go from there.
It's almost like the simplicity of it makes it, or made it easier. Was it also like, not to be like, you had no options, but I guess the lack of options compared to now where it's like, you can swipe till your arm falls off. But nowadays it's like, you only see a certain number of people in like your neighborhood or at school or something like that.
Right. I think the way I see it now, I think we had many more options as far as Black women. The brothers weren't like they are now, like, oh, them Black women, them attitudes, they so dominant. I'm going to go over here with these white girls. You know, they weren't like that. They, you know, we were the shit, like, in clubs and everything. They were looking at us. Hey, how you doing? You were always, if you went out to a club or something, you would always meet someone. Always. Because that's where people went at the time to meet someone. You know, you get dressed up, go to Joyce Leslie, get you an outfit, and you're gonna meet somebody.
Did you face any stigma being a teen parent? And it, you know, how were you clubbing? Who was watching your baby?
You know,
where would she go?
I didn't start clubbing probably until mid-20s. Sometimes in the summer, my kids would go stay with my mom. And because I had moved to New Jersey shortly after my oldest was born. And by the time I started clubbing, like I said, they would go away for the summer. So I would go out during the summers. And my birth parents actually lived in the New Jersey area. And they had friends, and the friends may have teenagers. And so the kids would get babysat by them, you know, because I started working my job that I've been on for 33 years now when I was 20. You meet so many, you know, back then we met so many people. So, yeah. I had babysitters to go clubbing.
Takes a village. Takes a village.
How did your adoptive mom respond to you being pregnant at 18? Because it sounds like that's kind of like her worst fear come true. You know, from 12, she was already anticipating this teenage parenthood, and then boom, you about close to graduation, and you pop up.
She was a bit disappointed because I was college bound. I was an honor student, and that's what she wanted for me. But she told me, that's not the worst thing that could happen to you. You could, because at the time, this is the time of the AIDS epidemic. You're talking about 86? Oh, yeah. And she was more afraid of me catching AIDS than getting pregnant at the time, because there were people I went to school with who had went on to college who had contracted AIDS and were dying. So that was more of her fear.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, let's skip again. Okay. Yeah, let's skip again. Okay. Marriage number two. When was that? Who was that?
Okay, marriage number two happened by the time I was 32 years old. By now, my kids are teenagers. I met someone. He was Jamaican born, living here in the United States.
Not a Jamaican man, Jesus.
Another bow-legged guy. I had a type. We met at the gym, actually. I met my last two husbands at the gym.
So you're back at it. You're back in your football days. Like, you're back in your tomboy era.
Yeah, I never left physical fitness, I swear. We got married within a month of getting to know each other. I mean, there was some agendas. He wasn't a citizen. There were some things going on there. But we really cared about each other. We were together probably 12 years. That ended with his deportation. He was deported. So there was some legal things there that just tore us apart. But we also had our issues with sex during the marriage.
Let's take a break. That's a good time to take a break. We're going to talk about the issues with sex during the marriage right after this. So is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit, helping you unlearn some old shit, or just allowing you to have a good ass time? It is. Okay, well, we love to hear that. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, you can take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and leave a rating for the homies. If you got a little extra change, you can drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or you can come join our Patreon community, of which Melissa is a part of, and many other dope-ass people, and access our chat, virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhoeuprising, or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. It's a very good podcast. We thank and love you all for your continued support. Also, before we get back into the show, there's a portion after this break in which we want to give a content warning for suicide. It's not immediately after the break, but if this is a topic that you wish to not hear at the moment, please check the time code in the show notes to skip forward. Now, what were those issues in this 12-year marriage?
The issues were he did not want to be sexually active. Mm-hmm. And so that created a problem for me. Yeah. 32. They say that 30-something years old are in their prime. Women mm-hmm. are in their prime, and they are extremely horny. Okay, so yeah, that's what's true at the time. And my husband was not having sex.
Yeah,
and. So I went back to that old song, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you wish. And I went out and found someone who wanted to have sex.
An affair occurred.
I had a couple of affairs.
Okay.
I was going to ask, was this like a poly arrangement? Did your husband then know and was like, all right? Or
he found out... because I got a little sloppy. It went on for a few years. I got sloppy and left a receipt somewhere in the car. Ooh. And he found the receipt. He said,
a paper trail,
girl. This is, we still got the flip phones on Sprint now.
Wait, what was it a receipt for?
It was a receipt for parking. It was parking in New York. Okay. Mm. I live in Northern New Jersey.
He was like, you don't live in no fucking New York.
Okay. I was supposed to be somewhere else other than this New York City. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Not an affair with a New Yorker. You messing with too many things close.
Actually, he was an Italian. He was visiting.
What? Yes. I love it.
Wait, this is amazing. This sounds like a movie.
It sounds like a whole movie.
How did you meet him?
On a cruise ship.
Melissa.
I believe.
What? Come on, you guys. I'm like, this is impossible.
No, I just love it. It's real. Messy.
Yeah,
it's messy.
I listen to your podcast because it's so real.
Okay? I love the messiness. So was this a cruise vacation that your husband was on with you? With friends? Okay.
No, he couldn't travel. He wasn't a citizen.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. Okay.
No, me and my oldest daughter had went on this cruise. And, yeah.
Did she know the mess was happening?
No, she didn't know.
Okay.
She had a whole mess she was doing. She's going to listen to this like, wait a minute. We was having too much fun. I went on with some other family members, actually. And my daughter and I shared a room. And this guy, he worked on the cruise ship. Nice looking guy. And at the time, it didn't matter to me about that this person was not Black, you know, that's how I was at the time, you know, so, hey, and,
okay,
yeah, okay. So when he's, because it docked out of New York, the cruise ship, so he would come back into New York sometimes, and like, and at the time, I had days off during the week, so this cruise ship came back in, I make arrangement. I'll be in New York City.
These are the hotels that we live for on this show. These are the
hotels we live for.
So you guys are bringing up stuff I almost forgot about. I would have to look at photos to remember. And so we started hanging out, and then he had a vacation, and he flew in from Miami. Because that's where this cruise ship is based out of. So he said, I'm going to fly in for a weekend. Can you hang out? Blah, blah, blah. So, of course, I'm supposed to be somewhere else. But him and I were hanging out for that weekend. Yeah. So, and yeah, my husband found out. We went to therapy. It was the first time I went to a couples therapy. And I... You know, I remain faithful for the remainder of the marriage.
Was he potentially like asexual or
history of trauma?
Did you ever get to the root of why that was?
He said, "See, I had my tube tied when I was 25, so we met. We talked about having a procedure to make I could have more children." He said that when I made the decision, I said, you know, it's really not what I want to do. I really don't want to have any more children. My kids are teenagers. I really don't want to start over.
Yeah.
He said when I made that decision, it caused him mentally to shut down, and he just did not want to have sex. And I'm like, well, I don't know what to do with that. But like I said, I remain faithful. Until, you know, way later when we were separated because of the deportation. And with that, after a while, that became a problem. I was holding on. I was remaining faithful with my husband now in another country. But after a while, that got boring.
Yeah,
and, I feel it. You know, and like I said, we were still having issues. Although I was remained faithful and wasn't having sex with anyone else outside the marriage, we had started maybe 7 months prior to him being deported, stopped having sex. We weren't having sex. He wasn't even sleeping in the same bed. But he didn't see an issue. I saw an issue. There was a problem. And, but when he got deported, my heart went out and I tried to do everything I can to get him to re-enter back into the United States. It just didn't work out like that. And we ended up getting divorced a little later.
I feel that. Are you in contact with him at all?
He committed suicide.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
Years later, about 2017, me and one of his brothers actually, kept in contact, and he asked me, did he show any signs of like depression when we were together in the States? And I said, yes, he did. To look back, he stayed in our basement more than he stayed in our bed and just would not talk. He just did not want to talk about that, how he was feeling. I don't know. You know? Yeah.
If you are in suicidal crisis or emotional distress, there is help out there for you. I will be putting U.S. and global-based places to contact in the show notes. If you believe someone you know is at risk for suicide, I will be putting resources that help to identify warning signs, as well as resources on how to seek help for your loved one in the show notes.
Could we backtrack a bit,
okay.
Melissa, to you being 25 and deciding to tie your tubes? Mm-hmm. What led into that? What led into that decision?
Probably because I had two children. I had separated from, like I said, my first husband at the time. It was hard. It was very hard having two children. And I felt that that was enough. I didn't feel that I was going to find anyone else to be helpful. It just seemed that I'm having children, two different fathers, and they just weren't helpful. And I'm like, I can't risk having another child and having a parent, another parent that doesn't want to help out. Like this expected role that I'm supposed to do everything as a mother and go to work every day. That's not for me. So two is enough. And my doctor at the time, my gynecologist at the time, he asked me, said, are you having a bad marriage? And I lied. I said, no, everything's good. He said, because you're 25. And not most 25-year-olds have their tubes tied unless they're in a bad marriage and they're just feeling that, you know, they just hate the person they with. You know, it's just not good emotions going on. It may not be a good decision because you may not be able to reverse this. Mm-hmm. So you sure? He said, but I'll do it because you have two kids already, but I really don't want to. I said, just do it.
What is up with that? Why do doctors have to say that?
Doctors and their personal preferences.
Yes, personal.
These are your tools.
Write it in your diary.
Yes.
Like,
when you get home, do this. Talk to your therapist this. About it. Like, why are you placing that on your patients?
Yes. It's a lot. It's a lot to deal with. Being a woman, like I said, a Black woman, in our bodies. And what we want to do with our bodies, the choices we want to make, because birth control pills were just not an option for me. I would have rather been able to take a pill or some kind of other contraceptive, and none of them just did not work. I needed my tubes tied.
Did you ever get to the bottom of that or try to, like, what it was about birth controls that were causing you severe, like, symptoms and stuff?
No. I didn't, because like I said, at 25, I had my tubes tied. And
yeah,
and
you were just like, I don't care. Yeah, I don't care no more.
Like, you know, yeah. I what I do is ask other young people questions about it. Mm-hmm. Like, because my daughter was, I think she had problems, my youngest, with it still. And so she had like an IUD, I think. Mm-hmm. I think they call them something different now, but they were IUDs when I was younger, and mm-hmm. they were known to be very painful back then. I guess mm-hmm. they've changed now. Also, there was, at the time before I had my tubes tied, there was a...
The Depo-Vera shot?
The thing they were putting, yeah.
Yeah.
And I asked him for that. I asked my doctor for that. And he said, if you can't take birth control pills, you won't be able to take that. Now, I'm going to shoot that in your system, and you're going to really be sick. Mm. And you want me to get it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's like, I don't. I said, well, I need my tubes tied then. Because I had a few abortions also. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to keep doing that.
Makes sense, yeah. That's a, for lack of a better word, bummer when it comes to options of birth control and stuff like that. Like, it reminds me of something that was going viral a couple of days ago with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and how it causes mm-hmm. blood clots in 6 out of 1 million people. And people were like, birth control causes blood clots in 1 out of 1,000. But we didn't stop production for it. We didn't. We haven't figured out why.
Mm-hmm. No.
They were like, this is what you're going to have to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, because they still don't want us to take it. You know, you got these conservatives that still don't want us to take birth control.
That's a really good point, too.
Unreal how they still want to control our bodies and what we do with our body.
Yeah.
It's like, just give us the right things. Give us what we need.
Let us be full business. Actualized human beings for like 1 second.
Exactly. And you know what you men need to do is put on a damn condom willingly. Damn it.
Yeah.
Nobody gotta keep forcing you to put a condom on.
Yeah.
The hell.
Okay. So in your email, you had described your sex life up until your 30s as just a guy on top of me, a few humps, and we were done.
Mm-hmm.
What changed in your 30s, and like what kind of sex were you then having and stuff like that from then until now?
That came later. That came later, probably in the last maybe 3 years. When I really started just saying, no, I don't like that. I want this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you provide that? Or can you, do you want to explore that? And if not, go away, because I want more. You know?
I want to know how you went from experiencing sex, learning about sex through these romance magazines and mirroring what you saw in media, and kind of what sounded like pioneering sex, you know, in the 80s and oral sex, to then just having these mediocre experiences with men. Were they just no longer willing to be open?
It would start out, I think it was a result of my just being repetitive with relationships, like one relationship after another. And the relationship would start out fun. It would start out, the sex would be fun and everything. And then every relationship, the guy seemed to turn to use sex as a way to control me.
Mm.
Well, like dangling it at me, you know. And I also went into that mindset that if I give him sex, he's going to love me. I had my share of issues with self-esteem and trying to do everything I can to hold on to the person I was with. And I thought sex was the ultimate deal, and found out like, nah, that it wasn't, that I had to get to know myself and really make my own choices about what I want and stick to that, stick to my guns about that. Like, no, you this for your pleasure, getting on top of me and getting your, you know, your shots off, that ain't for me. Like, I don't want to have sex that way. So, but it took a long time in my adult life to come to that, to starting to control what I wanted sexually.
We love that for you in that era of your life. To close the loop on marriages, when was marriage number three, and who was that?
Marriage number three came shortly after my divorce in 2013. I remarried in 2014. Like I said, I met him also working out. And to this day, this man is, I'm 53, so he's 55. He has a body of a 25-year-old muscular man. Seriously.
Yay! Get it? Does he also have the stamina, or did he have the stamina of a 25-year-old?
He had some left over. You know what I'm saying? You see my hands here? Yeah, some left over. All right.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I'm sure there's some young women out here that's probably curled up in the corner somewhere with a thumb in the mouth. That one, but.
So what happened in this marriage?
Now, I don't, like I said, I've did my share of cheating, but that marriage, again, shouldn't have happened. At the time, he was living with someone else, and he came to live with me, thinking that it would be a better situation than him with me, and, you know, it that was messy, and the stories he was telling me about how miserable he was with her, blah, so I'm thinking, I'm the shit now, you know, you're going to be over here with me, life's going to be so much better, which it was, because, yeah, financially, I took him from one place to a higher place, but
upgrading.
Yeah, I grew up. Yes, I did a Beyonce. I grew upgraded. But he, I found out about a year later, does he did start acting kind of funny, you know, not some nights not coming home, saying he was out playing cards. And eventually I found out that he was cheating on me with her. I tried to get past that. Like, okay, that's not a deal breaker completely for me. But he did not want to change his attitude. He was verbally and could be physically abusive also. And I could tell that he was not through with that situation over there. What the issue with that was, she still wanted to be with him to the point where she went as far as trying to destroy my livelihood by calling and emailing my job.
Oh no.
Okay. And I just got to the point, I was like, in order for her to stop fucking with me, I gotta stop fucking with you. So I'm leaving. And I separated from him and I divorced him.
Good decision.
It was time. I had one more like committed relationship after that. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work out. This person was a binge alcoholic, I found out. That didn't work out. And after that, I said, the break that my therapist had suggested back in like 2012 is the break I'm taking right now. And I'm going to figure this thing out. What uh-huh. the heck is going on? Why am I keep having these string of bad relationships and I'm not having good sex? Mm-hmm. Just by being by myself. So that's what I did.
Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, sooner rather than later, you listen to the therapist. Like, whenever it comes, it comes.
It took me about 7 years for me to take that advice, but it came, and I did. And it has been beautiful. And I am in a good friendship where I am still having sex. Oh, and okay. It is very pleasurable. And we do explore.
Okay. This. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Why are you calling it a friendship?
We tried a commitment a few months ago. It seemed that from him that I wasn't measuring up to his feelings for me. And we started to argue. I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. So let's try being friends. You go ahead if you choose to, you know, have sexual relations somewhere else. But we get together, you know, we have to do what we have to do to protect one another. But I'm not ready for a committed relationship. And I took about 2 years, just me chilling, getting single. 2019 was lit. You know, Marsha's Plate, live podcast, you guys having sex trivia and potting live. And I did all that stuff in 2019. Okay. My life was lit being single.
Moving. Yeah.
You know? So I'm not about to sit up here in a relationship and argue and have these issues. So let's be friends. Yeah.
Solid.
And it's been very pleasurable. And their willingness to explore is definitely pleasurable for me.
And when you say explore, because you have said mm-hmm. explore 3-4 times now.
Yes, what, I like that.
in this new context of your life, what are you exploring? Like, what are
well,
you finding out?
Well, as in my bio, kink. Mm-hmm. I'm with an online group, and because there's things that I like. I like choke. I like paddling, spankings, and so we're looking into that.
I do.
They don't prefer that. But if, you know, if that's what I want to receive.
Okay.
You know, we're definitely looking more into that. Yeah.
Cool.
Because that's an art. Kink is an art. It's not something you just go out and do. You don't go and put your hand around somebody's throat nonchalantly.
Yeah. You know? It is definitely an exploration. It's an explorative mm-hmm. process.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. This online group, you don't have to shout them out if you don't want to.
Oh, no, no.
Like that. Okay.
No, yeah. I won't. Right.
Are they specifically for like Black people or?
Yes, it okay. is Black. Uh-huh. Black and all sexual backgrounds, you know. So trans, even though I haven't seen a trans in the group yet, mm-hmm. but.
It's yeah. inclusive of people of all it's gender, inclusive sexualities.
Of all thank you. Cool. Thank you. Sometimes I can't find the words.
No problem.
A lot of these words, terminologies are totally yeah. new to me. I have learned so much from listening to the Bad Brigade. How do you say
bad
that?
Bitch the Bad Bitch Brigade.
Yes.
Oh, Lord. Too many B's.
Yeah. B's. Yeah, the B's. I've learned so much about terminologies and everything.
Awesome.
So, you know.
That is definitely what we're here for. And mm-hmm. this is an important question that me and Akua had, and you kind of were getting at it early when you were like, you know, back in the day, Black women were the shit. These men nowadays. So tell us about these men nowadays that you're encountering, I guess in your age group too, because I don't mm-hmm. really have any experience with the 50 and up men group.
Let me tell you about a particular encounter where... when I really decided to take my hiatus from dating, uh-huh. when I went out, I don't know if I wrote you this, the time that I went out with a guy, I guess at the time he was about 58 years old, and this guy didn't have enough money to pay for our meal. Ooh. Okay. Ooh. That was not cute. And it says the whole time, and somebody, I don't know who had the email. I don't know if it was your podcast or it was T with Queen and Jay. Uh-huh. That someone wrote in about a guy they went out with and they talked about their ex the whole time. I don't know which podcast it was. I listened to it last week.
I don't remember either.
Okay. But one of you from the BBB uh-huh. Had an email about this, and that's what it was.
Oh,
you had divorced your wife in 1997 and it's now 2019, because I remember 2019 because I was about to go to Dubai at the time, and you still talking about her.
Homie is hurt.
Yes. Hurt. And then you know, we order a meal, you order the same thing as me, and I ordered a glass of wine. You ordered a glass of wine. It has the prices on this menu, okay? We weren't at Morton Steakhouse somewhere where there's no prices. And you take out $55 because now the bill is like $59.85. You say, can I borrow $5? Because I said, so what you going to do? Get a waitress 15 cents tip?
Oh, my God. Man.
And here, I was like, here's $20. I called over the waitress. I said, come here, take this. Okay, because I'm not going to leave this at the table because this food may take my $20.
To the next date.
And so, and he asked, you know, the next day, he was like, could we do a do-over? I was like, no, we cool.
Do you got do-over money?
you know, sir. No, we're not doing nothing over, okay? And it's and it was one more. I didn't go out with them because I made a decision from that date that I would have a conversation with the person over the phone or through mm-hmm. DMs or whatever to get to know them better. Because that's mm-hmm. something I had never really did in my adult life. It was just quick dating, quick getting married, whatever. Never really getting to know the person. So I was like, I'm going to get to know these people. And I had a conversation with a guy and seemed kind of strange. Mm-hmm. I let it go. He took 3 days to call me. I don't know what kind of bullshit that was, but he did. And then you talking weird. And then I don't hear from you again for 55 more days
because
I
had to
text. Yes, I had to text in my phone. Last time this guy texted me. Wait a minute. It's almost 2 months. Damn.
Yeah.
So I didn't answer back. I just didn't answer back. Like, okay. Well, you know, and that just became my filter, mm-hmm. having the conversation. Mm. And I'm like, I'm too cool. I'm too cool now at being single. I'm lit.
I love it. So how are you meeting people now, perspectives? Are you on the apps?
I haven't did that. I was planning on doing that. I had told my therapist. I think she was a bit wary when I went. I took the break. I'm like, you told me to take the break. Yeah, but are you okay? I'm like, I'm just fine. I said, you know, when it comes time again for me to, if I really want to get back out there, I'll go on the app. So mm-hmm. I haven't did the app yet. I have never did online dating. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm so busy. I have actually 3.5 more years to this date to retire from my job. And so I'm setting myself up for that life after retirement. Mm-hmm. I'm taking a real estate course, tax prep course, you know, so I can make my own hours.
Healthy and wealthy post-retirement.
I mean, hey, my daughter's in Playa del Carmen right now for 2 months. I'm about to go there in a couple of weeks on vacation. So we making plans. Like, we making plans post-retirement. Yeah. So I'm so busy with that, that life that, and like I said, I have a friend that I share, you know, going out on dates with, going away on trips with, having sex with, that I'm not worried about. I'm not, considering meeting anyone right now, you know. But if that time comes later on, yeah, I go online. I'm not afraid of it. Like I say, I don't know how long it's going to be. I'm not putting a timeline on this. I'm having too much fun.
I love it. Just
being me.
So you've talked a bit about hitting sexual prime in the 30s. What kind of sexual changes comes around 40s, 50s? And what are some misconceptions?
What happens, what had happened to me, I just wanted to be touched more. I wanted to experience more. And by being in a whole marriage, I felt I should. Misconceptions. I've had this conversation with men. Mm-hmm. And I asked, these men have been friends of mine for a while. It's like, why do you still feel the need that you got to marry the good girl? But yet you have the so-called bad girl on the side. Why don't men just marry the bad girl? And I say bad girl, but that's how men have framed us.
The virgin whore dichotomy kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. If the woman is sexually active, you meet her, she's sexually active, why can't that, and you enjoy that with her, why can't that become your wife? Why would you go and marry a woman that's so-called goody and then you're going to cheat on her because she ain't having sex with you? That don't make any that darn sense. Mm-hmm. You know, really. They really couldn't answer me. Mm. I never got a straight answer from that.
I feel like it has to do with a lack of introspection on their part. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't want to go and I think what's great about like the fact that you listen to all of our podcasts and stuff like that and you're like, I don't know these terms, but I'm trying to learn. Like, obviously you're trying to do like a lot of growth, inner growth, growth about things that you don't know, growth about things that you might like, and all this kind of stuff. Like, you're expanding your worldview. Right. And it sounds like
I'm not set in my ways.
Right.
That's bullshit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think that benefits anybody being set in
it
your
doesn't
ways.
It doesn't. I feel that growth goes on to the day you leave this earth.
Really? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people in my age group and older don't feel that way. It's like, you can't teach me nothing. Can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, oh well, you go over there. Can't come over here with me.
That is something that's something that you wrote into us about. If we could take a second to talk about it, like not having friends your age who are, I guess, as open-minded as you when it comes to sexuality.
And even my thoughts about people who are bisexual or I don't know why I don't like using that word homosexual. It's okay to use that? Because you hear it. Yeah, gay. Okay. Because people use that word so cruel.
Yeah.
And so I hate it to come out of my mouth mm-hmm. because I have no intentions of being cruel.
Right.
But, you know, the feelings about it, it's like, eh, it's okay. You know, they do what they do with their lives. As long as they don't bring that over here. What do you mean? What do you mean, don't bring that over here?
Yeah. What do they mean? People are not fucking right in front of you.
Right. And that's my thing. See, that was my thing when I asked these guys about that. You mm-hmm. act like you take the so-called bad girl home, the one that's, you know, backflipping for you, that she gonna pour stuff out on the table and like, come get me daddy in front of your parents while you're eating collard greens? No. What is this?
Yeah. Yeah. So what kind of social relationships are you having with people? Like, have you found, since you wrote in that email, have you found more open-minded people? Are you still looking for more open-minded people?
You know, COVID happened.
Oh, true.
Lockdowns happened. True. So it's even I had started trying to do meetup groups to meet new people. And that, of course, shut down. So no, not yet. I still have my same, you know, girlfriends and whatnot, but I just let them be them. Like, okay, girl, you know, that's the way you are. Okay, that's fine. That's fine for you.
Yeah.
But I know what I want. Mm-hmm. And so no, I haven't met anyone that I could share that with. And I mean, that's one of the things on my vision board, to have that kind of girlfriendship that we can really kick the shit, talk mm-hmm. shit, mm-hmm. and be completely open about it, you know. And, you know, they don't feel judged. And I think that often happens with my age group, where they still feel judged mm-hmm. when if they talk about masturbation or, you know, having different sexual experiences, even if it's not within your gender. If it is the same gender, mm-hmm. you know. I feel that's still very hidden in my age group mm-hmm. of women and men.
Yeah. I affirm open-minded, fun-ass friends for you post-lockdown.
Yeah. Yes.
In your near future, because I know they're out there.
Yes, they are.
So, Melissa, you have grown children. Do you talk to them about these kind of things now? And what was, you know, sexual education for them as you raised them?
Okay. Sexual education came with them just coming out and asking me. And then my willingness to just answer. And I never will forget the first question. It was my oldest one who said, "Mom, what's a BJ?" And I knew she wasn't talking about the Whole Food place.
Not the whole sales club.
Okay. And she's about, I think she had to be around maybe 10, 11 years old. And I just knew, I say, they're talking about this.
Yeah.
For her to ask me this, they're having a conversation about this. And I don't want these little boys or little girls telling her what this is mm-hmm. and telling her lies. So let me tell her the truth of what it is. Okay. This is what it is. That's what a BJ is, honey. So, and from there, and I was so glad I did that, because even with their, you know, when they start to get their cycles, I found sanitary napkins in the bathroom. No one came to me and was like crying like I was, screaming bloody mother, like, "What is happening to me?" They were ready. They just went ahead and did it. You know, took care of things. Went in, you know, they found I had sanitary napkins. So it's like, okay, let's take care of this. This is what's happening to my body now. So I just, you know, they were pretty open with asking me, and I was just open with answering. You know, not that they didn't have their sexual traumas, because I've heard more about that as they've gotten older, but I'm so glad that I was open about it. you know, and now that I have a grandchild and one on the way.
Congratulations.
Oh, congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. And my daughter, my oldest daughter has, you know, quite a few reservations about her future. And I just tell her, like, don't stress yourself out about that stuff. You know, do like I did and better. You know, answer her questions because she's going to have questions.
How old is your grandbaby?
She's 2 going on 3. Okay. Going on 50 something.
Mm-hmm.
Woo, boy. She is tearing Mexico up right now. Just, yeah. But she is a joy. A beautiful joy.
Are you sharing your current hotels and experiences in dating with your grown children?
They don't really ask. And when I say things like, you got your club shot up, you know,
oh.
or digging up in them guts, they're like, ah, oh my God.
That's so funny.
Yeah. From parent to parent, I need help, Melissa. So one question, and I'm, you know, I take the approach of answering my son's questions as he comes. But one question I just have not sat down to be able to figure out an answer. He keeps asking me, where do babies come from? And I'm just like, I don't got it for you right now, honey. Like, mommy can't answer that question right now. Help, Melissa. Help.
Really?
What am I about to say that child?
I'm learning from you.
Oh, Lord.
Not nobody has the tools. Oh, no.
Like, it just sounds like I see it as a very sit-down technical conversation. And I don't want it to be a very sit-down and technical conversation. Mm.
That's exactly what I would suggest. I was like, make it very science, make it very medical.
Technical?
Yes, it sounds like I'm about to, the penis enters.
But that's what happens.
I just.
And yes, that's what happens. The truth.
I know.
It's just the truth. That's all I can
suggest. It's a process of science.
Just tell him the truth. Your son, what you said in that interview a few weeks ago, your son seems to be very smart.
Yes.
And he will get through that conversation just fine.
He might know like 50% of the way, to be honest, Akua.
Exactly. He probably checking on you. He probably,
when I asked my parents, I already knew the answer. I was just like, are these motherfuckers going to tell me? They might be pulling back.
Yeah, that may be his thing. That may be why he asked me. Let me see if she's going to tell me the truth.
Things that he kind of already knows and wants to see what I'm going to tell him.
Yeah.
But okay, I guess we just got to sit down and get technical. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, just tell them the truth, honey. That's it. That is it.
The science.
You know, you're a cool parent, I got to say.
Thank you.
You really are, you know, what you shared in that interview, you a super cool parent. You got this. No problem.
Thank you. I'm just out here trying.
Yeah.
It's gonna go well. Melissa, this has been an amazing hour and a half speaking with you. I could talk to you for another hour and a half, to be honest.
I can't wait when we have
in real life events again to see your lovely face in person. And
I can't either. This is getting boring
Before we wrap things up with you, what does the future look like for you? You know, what are some things that you're looking forward to when lockdown ends, when you're vaxxed and waxed and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. More, like I said, more local events, getting back, you know, to the BBBs, giving more events. I can't wait to have another Pod Alive.
Pod Alive is so fun. Shout out to Tiwa Queen and Jay.
I still love it. At 53 years old, I still love to go out and dance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy that. And especially gay clubs. I ain't been to a straight club since the 90s.
Gay clubs do be superior, though.
What? I introduced my cousin who came out to me to a gay club.
Oh.
He had never been to one. I introduced him to one. And it, yes. Because I had been on the scene for a while. Once I was introduced to one gay club, it was like, this is where I'll be.
This is home.
Yes, because I love to dance, and I still do. Yeah, that's what that looks like. You know, things opening back up and me retiring. That's
yes. Yes.
Love that. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience, or do you want people to follow you on social media or any of those kinds of things?
They can follow me on Instagram. So I post some things up there sometimes. I'm at being_Melli, M-E-L-L-I, on Instagram. Mostly it's about my granddaughter and her shenanigans. She was just feeding a white tiger the other day.
Oh my God.
In Mexico. So
living her best life. Go ahead, baby.
Yes. As far as sharing, I just want to say, because I know, I don't know, are you guys millennials or generation something? You millennials?
Yeah, we're all millennials.
Y'all got a bad rep from us older folks, okay? And I be having to check these older folks with y'all. Be talking about you lazy and, you know, they just don't appreciate things in life. You're spoiled, this and that. Like, let me tell you something about the young people. If it wasn't for the young people out here changing things, we would still have that Cheeto head and as president, because it won't our asses out there on the front lines marching and out there getting people to register to vote. Things. This is you young people doing this. And I'm telling you, I wanted to share with you that you're doing a wonderful job, not only with podcasting, but with, like I said, putting these groups together. I'm also in the Black Achievement Fund, which is a bunch of young people, okay? I'm not finding things with 50-plus year-olds organizing any goddamn thing to advance and progress of the world that we live in now. It's you young people that's doing it. And I've been asked for by a few young people at my job. They said, "Miss Melissa, is there any hope for us dating in the future?" I said, "Yes, it is. Because you got the opportunity now. You have all these teaching platforms now to learn from. I didn't have that. And also, I mean, they have my number. They can call me. You want to talk to me about something, things you're feeling. You got support. I didn't have that either."
Yeah.
You got all the support you need. You got therapists out here. Go see a therapist. Don't be ashamed. And love yourself. Love yourself so much that other people, you get on other people's nerves with it. Love yourself so much. I mean, seriously. Yes. You know? And that's where better relationships are gonna come.
Yeah.
I was just telling my daughter today, she was very overwhelmed. She's, 5 months pregnant. She's having, a bit of issues with the baby's father. I was like, because of the way he is and the things that he won't do. She says he's very immature. I said, what you need to do is mind your business and worry about you and that baby. You know where he is. And his maturity and everything and how he's probably not going to do the right thing. Don't worry about it. Let it go. Love you. Do for you. And everything else, the universe is going to provide for you. It's, you're going to manifest abundance just by loving yourself. So there is hope for dating and having a good time out here. But in the meantime, if you're not dating already, we got too many sex toy websites out here.
There's a lot of them.
Get you something. I don't care if you're male or female. We got plenty out here things to do.
Whatever your genitals, there's a sex toy for
whatever.
There's a toy for it.
And just enjoy your life. Get started now. Don't wait till you're 50 years old to start enjoying life. Get started now.
That is really good advice.
Thank you very much.
And honestly, thank you for giving millennials and Gen Z their flowers and stuff like that. But I also want to give Gen X their flowers and stuff. Like,
thank you.
Maybe you weren't out there marching on the front lines and stuff like that, but like you took your experiences and you learned and you imparted that on your daughters. Like, there's no inner. I'm getting emotional because my mom passed away. But like, there's no inner whole uprising without my Gen X ass mom who was like, uh-huh. Bitch, live a free life, like.
Yeah,
y'all did things, and we thank you for that. Yes. We give you your flowers.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that has been so lovely. I love this episode. I can't wait for people to listen to it. Thank you very much for joining us, Melissa.
Thank you.
If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate all of you.
Also, if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. Again, join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. You can head over to InahoUprising.com to pay a hoe. You guys can again follow Melissa Meliho at being_Melli, M-E-L-L-I on Instagram. You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram, Twitter, Clubhouse, just about anywhere.
And I am just about anywhere at Slam Rid. Have a lovely week, because you all motherfucking deserve to.
Bye.
Bye.